Hello and welcome to DNA Today. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. Have a little bit of a cold, but hopefully I can get through the show okay. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. I'm talking about news stories, lessons, everything to keep you updated and educated on the ever-changing world of genetics. You can tune in every Monday at 11:30 a.m. to hear me live on WHUS.org, or if you're in the car on campus, on the radio 91.7 FM. And it's October. We're ending October, but it's still October, and that means it's National Awareness for many types of cancers, disorders, and diseases. So coming up on today's episode, I'm going to be discussing some of these, giving a 101 lesson on these diseases. But before I get into that, I'm really excited to let you guys know about this fantastic event happening here at UConn Stores, Understanding Risk for Breast and Ovarian Cancer, a discussion for students as consumers and future healthcare providers. So this is happening right here on campus on November 4th from 5 to 7 p.m. And the event is being hosted at the Hillel House on North Eagleville Road. It's right across the street from the chemistry building at the end of Towers Path, right in that little intersection there. And I'm really excited to be the MC of the event. So I'm going to be asking questions and kind of having the audience interact with the panelists. So mark your calendars for November 4th, 5 to 7 p.m. And dinner is going to be served. Dairy Bar ice cream is going to be there. So why should you come to this event? Why is it important for you to attend? Well, 2010 National Health Interview Survey indicated that less than 50% of the U.S. adult population is aware of cancer susceptibility genetic testing. So I talk a lot about genetics on the show. It's a genetic show. So obviously this event is very important in my eyes. And the Department of Public Health Genomics Office has invited panelists, including genetic counselors, a scientist, physician, and student survivors for an interprofessional and interactive event to increase awareness of family risk for hereditary cancers, genetic testing and counseling services available, genetic non-discrimination laws, and about preventative services covered under the Affordable Care Act. So it really is a comprehensive event that covers a lot of different things and from a lot of different angles, perspectives. We're talking with genetic counselors, scientists, physicians, and student survivors that have been on the patient end of things and really been experiencing this. And they can speak to those experiences and answer any questions. So family health history is a strong predictor of disease risk. So, for example, about 119,000 people in Connecticut, we're just talking Connecticut here, are of Jewish descent. And this is a high-risk population for harmful BRCA gene mutations. And BRCA kind of stands for breast cancer gene, and because it's very highly associated with breast cancer. So BRCA gene mutations are more likely to occur in families, people who have close family members diagnosed with breast and or ovarian cancer. This highlights the importance of collecting the family health history and sharing this information with healthcare providers so that they can get all the information they can to really make informed decisions, because that family health history is so, so important, and this event really drives that home. So furthermore, healthcare providers have an increasing role in identifying and the referral of patients at this high risk for hereditary cancers so that they can see genetic counselors and decide if they want to go through with genetic testing and go through with genetic counselors, kind of what the pros are, what the cons are for them specifically getting these tests, because everybody has a little bit of a different story and different kind of factors that go into having them decide if they want to get genetic testing or not. So if you're of Jewish descent, have a family member diagnosed with a hereditary form of cancer, or pursuing a career in medicine or healthcare sciences, this event is for you. We've designed it so that these groups of people are really going to get a lot out of the event. Other incentives, other than all of this great knowledge that you're going to gain from being here and that interaction with the panelists, include entering a drawing to win a $50 Starbucks gift card if you RSVP to the event by emailing judy.brown@ucon.edu. And so if you're planning on coming to the event, definitely RSVP, because you could end up winning this $50 Starbucks gift card. And sponsors of the event include the Connecticut Department of Public Health, Center for Disease Control, grant funding, UConn Hillel House, UConn Honors Program. Also, it is an honors event, so it can count as an honors event. So if you want to get them out of the way, come to this one. You'll actually have fun, and it's going to be a great event. UConn Department of Allied Health Sciences and UConn Committee on Interprofessional Excellence in Healthcare. So again, Wednesday, November 4th, from 5 to 7 in the Hillel House in North Eagleville Road, UConn Stores. Dinner, door prizes, dairy bar provided. So basically, mark your calendars and don't forget to RSVP to judy.brown@ucon.edu. So speaking of this event, covering breast cancer, I figured since it's National Awareness Month for breast cancer and other diseases, I'd cover that. So for breast cancer, I want to start with a quick overview of breast cancer. There's many different types, and the information I'm going to be sharing is from mybreastcancertreatment.org, and they have a lot of great resources. So if you want to learn more than I'm covering today, which I'm sure you do, you can go to mybreastcancertreatment.org. So non-invasive cancers are also called in situ breast cancers. And this means that cancer cells are confined to one place and have not spread tissue around the milk ducts or milk-producing glands, lobules. So ductal carcinoma in situ, or DCIS, is confined to the milk ducts, and it's the most common form of non-invasive breast cancer. Another type is lobular carcinoma in situ, LCIS, and is confined to the milk-producing glands. So unlike DCIS, LCIS is not known to be a pre-malignant condition, but rather a marker that identifies women at an increased risk for invasive breast cancer. So invasive breast cancers, also known as, so what I just covered is non-invasive. So it's the cancer is really staying in the origin. Whereas invasive breast cancers are known as infiltrating cancers, grow in the normal tissues surrounding a milk duct or a lobule and may be spread to other parts of your body. So invasive ductal carcinoma, IDC, forms in the milk duct and then breaks through nearby tissue. Now, invasive lobular carcinoma forms in the milk-producing glands and breaks through to surrounding tissue. So really looking at the milk ducts or the milk-producing glands. That's really the two kind of different types, but obviously there's more from that, but if you can break it into those two groups. So breast cancer grading is a score kind of based on how closely the cancer cells from your biopsy resemble those of normal breast cancer, so in terms of their appearance and growth patterns. So cancer cells are rated on a scale from 1 to 3. So grade 1 is very well differentiated, so you can really look at the cells and see kind of where the nucleus is, and that's a cell, and the next one you can tell between different cells, and they look slightly different from normal cells and grow in slow, well-organized patterns. So they're a little bit different, but they're pretty closely resemble normal cells. Grade 2 is moderately differentiated, so we're starting to get further away from normal cells. Grade 2 cancer cells do not look like normal cells and grow and divide somewhat faster than normal. Cancer is kind of out of control growth. It's not going through the cell cycle properly where it has checkpoints and it's very much regulated, whereas cancer is kind of all over the place, regulating very fast and out of control. So grade 2 is moderately differentiated where these cells are really starting to not look like normal cells. Grade 3 is poorly differentiated. So cancer 3 cells look very different from normal cells. They grow in quickly in disorganized, irregular patterns, and they look very, very different from normal cells. So breast cancer staging is a classification method based on the size of your cancer and how far it has or hasn't spread beyond its original location within the breast. And this is kind of a good opportunity to explain primary cancers versus secondary cancers. Now, primary cancers are cancers that originate in that organ that you're saying you have the cancer in. Later, I'm going to talk about liver cancer because it's also Liver Cancer National Awareness Month. But if you're talking about any kind of primary cancer, breast, liver, that means that if you have a primary cancer of that, that's where the cancer originated and started. If you have secondary cancers, that cancer that originally was in, say, the breast tissue has metastasized into another organ, and now you have cancer in that organ, and that's a secondary cancer. So that's how kind of metastasis works and the naming of things. So in most cases, staging, we're talking about breast cancer staging, is done after the tumor is removed and the lymph nodes have been examined. So you're kind of seeing where you are after surgery. Now, lymph node status indicates whether any breast cancer cells have moved from the original tumor into the lymph nodes. So the lymph nodes are these small bean-shaped organs that make up part of the lymphatic system, which is part of the body's immune system. So if breast cancer does spread, it usually spreads first to lymph nodes under the arm or the side of the breast cancer. So if lymph node status is positive, meaning the lymph nodes contain breast cancer cells, the cancer may be more likely to return or reoccur because it's more spread out and there's more cells. If lymph node status is negative, meaning that the lymph nodes appear to be free of breast cancer cells, again, we can never be sure of this because you can't look at every single cell, but you can kind of take an overview and see if there's anything, any findings of breast cancer cells. So if you have this negative status of lymph node, the breast cancer is less likely to reoccur, which makes sense because you have less cancer cells. So in the U.S., breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women after skin cancer. And what a lot of people don't realize is that breast cancer can occur in both men and women. It is very rare in men, but it still can occur in men, which is why it's important to point this out, because a lot of people don't know this. And, you know, breast cancer is often seen as like pink colors and really supporting women. But there's men out there that have breast cancer. And each year there's about 2,300 new cases of breast cancer in men and about 230,000 new cases in women. So there is a differentiation between them, definitely disparity, but nevertheless, men do get breast cancer. So I want to take this opportunity to discuss genetic testing in breast cancer, because a lot of people know about breast cancer, and that information I went over is kind of more common knowledge than other things I'll talk about on this show. But genetic testing is something that a lot of people really don't know about. And so this information not only can be used for breast cancer genetic testing, but also genetic testing for lots of other different things. And so I'm going to kind of go through the before and after of genetic testing. So prior to having genetic testing done, it's really, really vital to meet with a certified genetic counselor. This is because many healthcare professionals may say they offer genetic testing, but they're not trained at the graduate level in human genetics like certified genetic counselors. And a great resource to find genetic counselors is the National Society of Genetic Counselors. And you can just Google that, pops right up. And this is great because you can put in where you live and kind of a range of miles, and it will show in the search results all the different genetic counselors, what kind of facility that they are associated with, such as a hospital or more of a private practice. There are genetic counseling private practices out there that are starting to pop up. So you can find them on there, and it's great because they have their contact information on there, and it kind of puts everything in one place. Now, if you live in an area that you don't have many genetic counselors, or you'd have to travel very far to see one, it's good to know that some genetic counselors will have phone sessions. So you can reach out to those, and there's a lot of different organizations that kind of offer this, and genetic counselors will go through these organizations to counsel people that can't actually physically get to a genetic counselor. So once you're sitting down with a genetic counselor or you have them on the phone, you want to get as much information as you can to help you make your decisions, because you may think you want genetic testing, but you really want to gather all the information before you make this decision. So you want to ask genetic counselors about the risks and benefits that you have for getting genetic counseling, because every case is different with different variables. You have different family history than some people. You may have different health, that you may be obese, which changes your risk for certain things. Again, that family history. So you have lots of different variables that can affect things. And the right time of genetic counseling is important too. And the right time of genetic testing, really, because if you have a major life event coming up, it may not be the best time to handle this information. If you're about to get married or about to have a child, you may want to wait on this information because you have enough going on in your life. Or you may want to know this information as soon as possible because you may be wanting to get a prophylactic surgery to prevent yourself from, or at least to really lower the risk greatly to developing a certain cancer. Another beast to work with is insurance companies and finding out coverage and figuring out that whole thing. So you can ask genetic counselors to help you find out which tests are covered. They do this for a living, so they're constantly going through insurance companies, and a lot of times they know off the top of their head, all right, Aetna covers this, Blue Cross Blue Shield covers that, and they know these things, and if they don't know, they kind of know how to navigate the insurance system kind of better than you probably do. And genetic counselors will be able to guide you through which test you want to have done. So after you figure out what the insurance covers, you might have a couple options that everything, like certain things are within your price range, and they're going to help you decide if you've decided to go through the route of genetic testing, which test you want to have, which lab you want to have it done with, because there's lots of different types. So say you go through the genetic testing and you get your genetic testing results. It's very helpful for people to meet with genetic counselors after they get the results to help them review it and interpret it, because genetics is kind of like a foreign language. If you go to read this, it's, you know, you get a bunch of A, T's, G's, T's, and C's all in there, and you're not really sure what it means, and there's a lot of different terms on there, and genetic counselors are very fluent in genetics, and so they can help you with the results of your test and kind of point you to resources and advocate groups if you test positive for something, and kind of go through your options for prevention of things, because a lot of genetic testing is prevention, and not only for yourself, but also for your children and even your siblings. So your genetic testing results not only affects you, but it really affects a lot of your immediate family members and even further out. So very important to look into genetic testing, get all the information, and then make your decision. And genetic counselors can really help you do that. Liver cancer is another cancer that has October as its National Awareness Month. And it's the largest internal organ in the body and therefore serves many vital functions. Few of these include breaking down and storing nutrients, producing clotting factors that prevent excessive bleeding, and filtering and breaking down toxins like alcohol, which will later be excreted as waste. Now, having cancer in the liver can prevent all of these vital functions from functioning properly. So there's a few types of liver cancer. I'm going to go through two of them because they're the more common types. So the most common type form of primary liver cancer, which again, primary means that this is actually where the cancer originated in this organ versus secondary cancer, where the cancer has metastasized to another secondary organ and now you have cancer in that organ, but it didn't originate in that organ. So the most common form of primary liver cancer is hepatocellular carcinoma, which is also known as hepatocellular cancer. And this type occurs in 80% of primary liver cancers, 80%, so vast majority. And this form can either have a single tumor metastasizing late in the disease or many small cancer nodules in the liver. So we're talking about a single tumor metastasizing very late or many cancer nodules in the liver, one or many. Another form of primary liver cancer is intrahepatic cholangiocarcinoma, which is also known as bile duct cancer. And this is the other 10 to 20% of primary liver cancers. So just as the name suggests, this cancer impacts the small bile ducts, which affect these tubes and ability to carry bile into the gallbladder. So October is National Awareness Month for a lot of different diseases and stuff. I don't have time to go through all of them. Just went through two today, but definitely be sure to educate yourself on these diseases and cancers and disorders, because it's kind of the point of these. It's National Awareness Month so that the general public can learn about these, not only so that they kind of know what's out there to help support people, but also so they know for themselves and their own families. So very important to kind of be reading up on this and staying up to date. So before I end the show, I want to remind everybody to mark your calendars for the Understanding Risks for Breast and Ovarian Cancers Discussion for Students as Consumers and Future Healthcare Providers event, November 4th from 5 to 7 at the Hall House here at UConn Stores campus, right across the street from the Chemistry Building at the end of Towers Path on North Eagleville Road. Dinner, Dairy Bar Ice Cream will be served, and it's a free event. I don't know if I mentioned that, just occurred to me. Free event, you're getting dinner, Dairy Bar, and all of this knowledge on understanding people's risk for breast and ovarian cancers. So you can be sure to email Judy Brown at judy.brown@ucon.edu to RSVP and enter to win a $50 Starbucks gift card. This event's a great way to get an honors event done, as well as learn from physicians, gen counselors, and students about breast cancer and ovarian cancers and the genetic components of it, as well as the importance of family history, the ethics surrounding genetic testing, understanding of risk factors, and lots of other things that we're going to end up covering during this event. So if you see me at the event, be sure to say hi. I'm going to be the MC of the night. And I'm going to post all this information on my website, dnapodcast.com, as well as tweet it out at DNA Podcast. So if you have questions regarding this event, be sure you can email me info@dnapodcast.com. I'd be happy to answer any of your questions. But if you also have other genetic questions or suggestions for the show, or maybe you know someone or you would like to be on the show because you think that you could add some information to the show and share some experiences, Again, that's info at dnapodcast.com, or if you're into tweeting, at dnapodcast. So that about wraps up today's episode of DNA Today. You can tune in next week, Monday, 11:30 a.m. on whus.org or 91.7 FM to learn more about genetics. Thanks for listening, and join me next week, again, Monday, 11:30 a.m. to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.